Hey, it's Andrew Siciliano. What does CJ Stroud think of the Texans' new offense? We'll ask the Houston quarterback. We have a love story in the NFL, and it's cutdown day. All of that coming up on Inside Coverage. All right, we'll do a show. Welcome to Inside Coverage here live on Yahoo Sports TV, on YouTube, and wherever you can watch Yahoo Sports coverage. My name is Andrew Siciliano, and Inside Coverage, it's the how and the why behind the NFL. And today's quite a big day in the NFL. We're on at 6:30 Eastern Time, Monday through Thursday, including here today, 2.5 hours after final cutdowns were made. Rosters are down to 53. I'm going to stress these are the initial 53, because there are waivers, there are guys that can be moved to injured reserve, there are always GMs, all 32 of them looking around saying, did someone cut a player that I want more than a guy that I just kept? We'll break down all of that. There is plenty to talk about as all the teams are down to 53. But, you know, I can't tell you how much our text chain has been blowing up today, because not only Charles Robinson, but Frank Schwab as well, just blowing up my phone. Frank, the only thing you want to talk about is Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce getting engaged. It's the closest thing to a royal wedding. It's the biggest story in America. Your English teacher and your gym teacher are getting married. Frank, I'll let you have the floor first, because I know you've been champing at the bit to unload here. Go.
It is. You're not kidding when you talk about the royal wedding. I was thinking about this before. New Heights did what? 2.5 million, 3 million podcast views
something
when
like
it was live with Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
What would a pay-per-view of their wedding do? And I'm being serious. Like, it would
That's a great question.
25 million? Like, if the Kelce's...
Worldwide.
Know, is it going to be Taylor Kelce Swift or something? We'll figure that out later. But if they decided to put this on pay-per-view, they could retire. And not that they don't have enough money between them already, but it would be the gross national product of some small countries that they would make in a pay-per-view. Good for them. I feel like everybody has been so cynical about this, and everybody's complained so much about the airtime Taylor gets. These are two people that, yes, are uber famous, but they found each other. They're happy together. They're engaged. Charles is like the biggest Swiftie I know, so I'm sure he's excited about it. It's fun. It's great. I love it.
I enjoy that this was done on cutdown day, and it like hijacked the NFL's news cycle and completely wiped it out. I also enjoy that Frank is channeling his inner Jerry Jones and immediately monetizing the wedding. By the way, I think that's great.
I think it's great.
He's not wrong.
I hadn't even thought of that.
Yeah, he's not wrong.
How much? It would do a monster number on this.
Yeah,
so it would do a monster. Let's just say 10 million views, 10 million people,
which is very conservative. Very conservative. Yes.
Like, can you imagine if you just charged $19.99 for this?
Yeah.
There you go.
Wait, but
think 10 million what's is the, like 10 million if it crashed at 10 million. They could do 50, probably. Think about how many people watched her concert tour and whatnot.
Is there a marital undercard? Could we get Jake Paul to fight somebody and just turn it into like the biggest thing we've ever seen in history?
Well, you see, next year, as you know, Charles, like if they get married in June, I might have to go up against them. This would not be good. Like I don't want my wedding overshadowed Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce wedding, especially because Travis is probably going to dress better than me and look better than me up there and all that kind of stuff. So definitely, hopefully not a June wedding. I don't think I could put my wedding on pay-per-view and make 20 bucks.
How many people do you guys think attend this wedding, by the way? Because don't you have to, he has to invite the entire team, right? I mean, basically most of the organization you think would have to be
yes.
But there's got to be a cut list, right? Because it's just they both between the two of them
on cut day, there'd be a cut list for the wedding.
Why would there need to be a cut list? You could have this thing in the LA Coliseum if you
want. SoFi the stadium or whomever runs the SoFi stadium account did post like, hey, we're available for weddings if you want to book that. they could fill awesome. SoFi.
Yeah.
They could fill Arrowhead. And I'll be honest with you. I'm not patting myself on the back, but I'm about to pat myself on the back. I did not bring these two kids together. I don't want credit, but I would like an invite. But I would like an invite because for the record, on a humid day in St. Joseph, Missouri in early August of 2023. Yours truly was the very first reporter, the very first person to ask Travis Kelce on camera about what he had mentioned or Jason had implied on the podcast the day before, that he might have tried to connect with Taylor at the concert.
Wow.
And it went viral. We pinned him down. Wow. Michael Robinson and I pinned him down. And when he didn't want to go very far, and I said, wait a minute, has she reached back out? And he went, excuse me? And I said, has she reached back out? And he went like this. He had a microphone. And he went, and that's going to do it for this interview right here live on NFL Network. And M-Rob's like, he didn't say no. Like, and there it is. A million views later. Look at these two cute kids. They
By the way,
love.
Is this the biggest sports wedding or sports marriage, I guess, since like DiMaggio and Marilyn Monroe? Like, I mean, this is so crazy and unprecedented. Like, I was sitting here, my fiance comes through the door with her daughter, and they're both immediately like from the grocery store, and they're both immediately like, did you hear the news about Kelce and Swift? Like, it is crazy how this transcends the NFL. This transcends football. Taylor Swift is the one entity like, bigger than the NFL in the world.
It is Bob Waterfield and Jane Russell. You want to go back to the 40s? And yes, DiMaggio and Monroe.
That's a pull. I like that.
I don't think Kelce's holding up his end of these comparisons, though. Okay, like no offense to Travis Kelce, but
he's not the Joe DiMaggio of the.
No, he's not exactly a Joe DiMaggio type figure, I think, in the sports world. I will give him this, though. Probably the single greatest, like, taking your shot moment on a podcast in his like,
absolutely
maybe in
oh
a,
my goodness
in a form of any oh media maybe amazing yeah.
So the story goes like this. She came to Kansas City, and you know all that Swifties wear their little bracelets, right? At least they were during the Eras tour. And he was going to shoot a shot like the middle of the Eras tour, the biggest tour in recorded human history for a musical act, and he like put together a bracelet and tried to get it to her. And that was the question, because the story had been on the pod the day before. Jason kind of went there, and Travis didn't really say anything, that he tried to get her the friendship bracelet, like with her phone, with his phone number on it.
Yeah.
But they never really connected. And so that was my question. I said, did you really try to give her a friendship bracelet with your phone number? And he's like, I'm not going to talk about my personal life. Well, guess what? It worked. He shot a shot like from 98 feet away. Like, congratulations. Yeah, you shot your shot. You hit the full court three pointer. God bless you. Real quick here. Also, if you look at Nate Taylor's article on ESPN.com this morning, and then you piece this all together with the timing, I really firmly believe that this is Travis Kelce's final year. He didn't want to go out the way he did in New Orleans, the way they did in New Orleans. Right. He's going to be 37. He's lost some weight. He's gotten in shape. He hasn't missed a day at camp. This is it. Like, I would be stunned if Travis Kelce is a married man next year in 2026 playing as a Kansas City Chief. I think this is, and the timing, just look at the timing. This is his walk off into the sunset.
Yeah, and he's
I could see it, make more money in post career than he did in his career.
Oh, I mean,
absolutely.
He's set up at this point, right?
More money podcasting.
Well, how many commercials? Absolutely. I mean, this is it. He is
the most famous non-quarterback in the NFL, right? And maybe even more famous than all but a couple of quarterbacks, maybe every quarterback. Like, is he more famous than Patrick Mahomes at this point? If you were to ask, like, you know, if you're include that subset, like, Travis Kelce might literally be the most famous NFL player in the world right now, which is kind of crazy. And I hope he has a good season to go out. Last season was up and down, and obviously lost in the Super Bowl. But Travis has been beating the age cliff at tight end for years now. And it's unlikely, I think, that he rebounds and has a huge year. But he's one of those dudes. I hate ruling out Hall of Fame level talents doing special things. So I hope he has a good year to end his career. It's been such a special, great career for him.
I want to give Awful Announcing credit for the best headline of the day. It was almost like an Onion headline, and they nailed it. The headline was NFL podcast host announces engagement to recent guests. That sums it up. He's the most famous podcast host in America alongside his brother. Podcast host announces engagement to recent guest. Let's get to the football, because there actually is football. As mentioned, all teams are down to 53. Some teams, like the Lions, actually went beyond 53. They went to 50. They have three open spots still there to be filled. And we surmised yesterday with Dan Skipper's release that he is just waiting at home, and he doesn't have to go through waivers, and he will go back on the roster. We'll unpack that coming up in a second. Let's go to Cleveland, however, because all NFL news has to begin in Cleveland. I have it in my contract. Kevin Stefanski announced, no surprise, that Dillon Gabriel, guys, will be the number two quarterback. Shedeur Sanders will be the three. He will likely dress on game day as the emergency, which is the way things are done these days. Then there are only three, Joe Flacco being the starter, because yesterday, Charles, Kenny Pickett got dealt to the Raiders. This deal made too much sense for both teams. First off, from a Raider perspective, Pete Carroll said on Sunday they need an experienced quarterback. Aiden O'Connell is out for 2 months with a broken wrist. Well, this is it. Fifth round pick for a guy that has made 25 starts, has 8 fourth quarter comebacks. It's actually a pretty good value. And also from the Browns' perspective, you're getting back the pick you gave to Philly. And four is too many. They like Kenny Pickett. And I really do believe that he had a very good shot at winning the starting job, if not for the hamstring injury. But this clears the way. This makes it easier. And this, with injuries at running back and injuries at linebacker, you need that extra roster spot. In essence, you're getting back the pick that you used to draft Dorian Thompson-Robinson. Bear with me. You sent DTR to Philly with a 5 for Kenny Pickett. You drafted DTR with a 5. Charles, you're getting the 5 back. Like, you're made clean and you could go into the season.
Yeah, I mean, general manager Andrew Berry has had a few trades where, you know, he's kind of come up. You think of like the Amari Cooper trade. You know, they made out when they got more back from Buffalo than what they sent Dallas. Now, granted, they paid, you know, the salary, but I feel like Andrew Berry's been pretty savvy, you know, with some of these trades for later round picks. And I think the front office there, the coaching staff, I think you have to be happy with this situation from the standpoint of you drafted two quarterbacks, one in the third, one in the fifth, obviously Dillon Gabriel and Shedeur Sanders. And going into the preseason, you're thinking to yourself, well, hopefully one of these guys shows enough to, you know, give us some confidence, some ease going into the regular season with one of them as a backup. Now, of course, as Andrew said, I think ideally when this all came together initially, the thought process was that Kenny Pickett would be someone that could vie for that starting job with Joe Flacco. Obviously, injuries derail that. So then what's your upside? Once injuries derail it, both of the rookies could have bottomed out. They both could have been terrible in the preseason. And then what ends up happening, you're going to have to hang on to Kenny Pickett. You're going to have to hang on to four quarterbacks. You're going to have to basically set off into the season without recouping that draft pick as well. But now I think you've got Flacco as a starter, but you also now have a viable developmental player in Dillon Gabriel, where if, again, we talked about planting that seed in the preseason, if this breaks down moving into the regular season, there's reason to now look at Dillon Gabriel and say, let's get a look. Let's see what this guy looks like now that we've seen him be productive in the preseason. So I think if you're the Browns, it's the best case scenario out of not great circumstances with the injuries in the preseason.
Yeah, and I was saying yesterday on this show at the end that the Dillon Gabriel story has been totally overshadowed, and we get why. Shedeur takes up all the oxygen in the room there. But the fact is, the Browns drafted this guy in the third round, and a lot of people snickered at it and said, oh, he's not big enough. He doesn't have a big enough arm. And what has Dillon Gabriel done this preseason? He's balled out. Like, he's looked really good. The accuracy, anticipation, timing, the processing, it is all already at an NFL level for him. I don't know if physically he's ever going to be there to be a really good NFL starter, but everything else has looked really good so far. The offense has been moving. He's been productive. And I think the Pickett trade just shows how much confidence they have right now in Dillon Gabriel, at least to get a look at him. Like, I don't think any of the three of us expect Joe Flacco to start 17 games this year. It probably isn't going to happen. But now it's basically the Browns are saying we're comfortable with Dillon Gabriel taking the next set of starts, however many those are. I think this has been a great story, a fun story for a Browns team that has missed over and over and over a quarterback. They might have hit one here. I think he's just looked really, really good, impressive. I want to see him in a regular season. I want to see if this can carry over, because if it does, it could be franchise-changing for the Browns, honestly. I don't anticipate Gabriel's going to be a 10-year, 12-year starting quarterback in the NFL, franchise quarterback, but he's shown enough that he deserves that number two spot. There's no question about that.
They have, yeah. And guys,
can I do some redesign here? Some redesign. So I have an apology to make. Hey, Maddie, can you take the wide shot here, if you don't mind? So I'm at home, obviously, and sometimes you don't fix the set. So guys, I was just interviewing new Browns kicker Andre Schmidt for my Browns podcast. So, and I didn't like take all the Browns stuff down. So I apologize. we'll just redecorate here on the fly. And when we go to commercial, I'll put some other stuff on the shelves. But yeah, I don't want to look like too much of a homer there. I just need a giant map behind me.
You know, we wouldn't have seen it if you hadn't pointed it out, just so you know. I mean, maybe obviously the wide shot, it becomes a little more noticeable, but I don't think we were going to point it out, Andrew. You kind of ratted yourself out there.
Well, it's okay. Anything for the bit. Moving on. Let's get to New Orleans. So there's two ways to look at Kellen Moore's announcement today. And the announcement is Spencer Rattler, who was drafted last year in round 5 and started a few games last year, is his starting quarterback for the Saints week 1, where they open up against the Arizona Cardinals. Yay for Spencer Rattler, a guy who, growing up in Phoenix years ago, and he faces his hometown team in week 1, was the subject of a behind-the-scenes documentary, and he was the star of the Elite 11. And look, we followed his career forever. Eventually went to Oklahoma, then to South Carolina, and here he is the starter. So that's good for Spencer Rattler. But the flip side of this is, if you thought Spencer Rattler, Charles, was going to be your week 1 quarterback, why would you spend a second round pick, guarantee a second round contract to a player who is soon to turn 26 in Tyler Shuck, a player who is, in essence, the same age as Trevor Lawrence? And I have no doubt he will start this year, but he's not going to start right out of the gate. And Rattler has a chance to really hold this job. And if he plays well, hold it for a while.
Yeah. And I think when we talked about this previously on the show, my thought process was, if it's close, you go with the guy you drafted, who you just invested the pick in. And as you said, soon to be 26, you get that moving, right? But when I thought about when the decision was made today, I reflected on it in a sort of New York Giants kind of way. When I look at the Giants, I'm like, okay, well, why are you starting Russell Wilson over Jackson Dart, when Jackson Dart's looked well in the preseason? He's looked very good. He's looked very solid, had some flashes, and appears to me, if it was terrible circumstances, you could start him. I kind of feel like Tyler Shuck is the same situation. The production was very even when you looked at it in the preseason. So I would have given the nod to Shuck. But if I'm sitting there looking at the New York Giants with Russell Wilson and Jackson Dart and saying, you know what, just let's ease the rookie in. If, you know, you don't want to have something go wrong, break his confidence, like let's just give him some time to absorb the speed of the NFL. Once the regular season starts, you don't have to push him into the starting lineup immediately. Why would I not feel that same way about the New Orleans Saints if we set the age to the side? That's what I would ask you guys. Let's set the age to the side.
But you can't, Charles.
Do you have
as
big a problem with this?
You can't do that. That's
the
problem.
Okay, but Frank, let me ask you this. If you feel like you drafted him and your thought process is, we can still get 10 years out of a guy if he's 25, 26 when we draft him. Nowadays, good quarterbacks can last in, you know, deeper into their 30s. Does it really matter if you're starting him immediately because, oh man, he's 25, 26, when you're thinking in a 10-year time span anyway? Does it matter as much?
But I do agree with the logic there, but I think we both agree, and NFL teams think this way, and NBA teams think this way, and Major League Baseball thinks this way. When you are already basically 26 years old and you've played parts of 7 college seasons, this is who you are. You're not maxing out anymore. You better be ready to play out
That's
of the
fair.
Box. Like Bo Nix was last year. Had all that experience with him. And I think the fact that Tyler Shuck couldn't beat out Spencer Rattler, who was a 5th-round pick last year, who did not play well, by the way. He did play better in the preseason. He earned that job. I watched every single snap of Saints preseason football. And man, that was depressing just to say that out loud. But Spencer Rattler,
second straight day you've pointed out that you watched every snap. It almost seems like it's
harrowing.
You
Andrew.
Want
like this was bad times. Okay. Like, but so the fact that Shuck could not beat out Spencer Rattler, I think is, and I've been saying this since they drafted him. That pick made no sense. The difference between the Saints and the Giants. The Giants drafted Jackson Dart thinking this is our guy for the future. I don't know that the Saints necessarily should have thought that. Like, this is, it was like, what were the odds that Tyler Shuck was going to be their quarterback 5 years from now and be their franchise guy? I don't think it was very high. I think it was very high for Jackson Dart. I don't think it was high for Tyler Shuck. He's a low ceiling 26-year-old quarterback. His rookie deal goes through his age 29 season. Like, that's crazy. I think that the fact that he missed is just going to be another Saints draft pick that they just lit on fire. This team has no blue chip talent under 27 years old, except really Chris Olave, who has concussion issues. They keep wasting draft picks on future, trading future draft picks, just screwing up draft picks in many ways. Like, I think the Shuck pick is going to be. I think this is just another setback for the Saints, who are looking at this massive rebuild now. Usually a rebuild can happen in 2 years, a year, two, whatever. It's the NFL. Things happen quickly. You look at that Saints roster, their draft picks they've had, the salary cap issues they have. This is a multi-year thing. And I just think that the Shuck pick is kind of symptomatic of what's wrong with the Saints. Like, you drafted this guy in the second round with no plan. Like, it's, you drafted a 26-year-old quarterback when you're a rebuilding team and he can't even beat out Spencer Rattler. I think this is terrible for the Saints, to be honest with you.
To play devil's advocate, it might only be a couple of weeks, and a couple of weeks in the grand scheme of things, no one's going to get hurt. I mean, big picture, hurt organizationally, injuries, you know, happen, and cross your fingers that they don't actually happen here. I also think, look, if he's not ready, he's not ready, that they had an opportunity here with two straight home games. It's the Cardinals, it's the Niners, whatever, but they're at home. And then they go on the road, the Saints do, and no one has any expectations for this team, I understand. But they go on the road weeks 3 and 4 at Seattle and at Buffalo. Those are not rookie-friendly places to throw Tyler Shuck in if you think it's time to do that. But we'll see. That's Kellen Moore, a rookie head coach, his decision. All right, coming up next, a Texas-sized B-block. What Brian Schottenheimer had to say today about Micah Parsons' availability. They talked for an hour. And we will talk to Texans quarterback C.J. Stroud. That is coming up next on Inside Coverage. C.J. Stroud, quarterback of the Houston Texans, joins us coming up shortly. Also, we'll go through who we think will be hot on the waiver wire. 24 hours for 32 teams to sift through the players that the other 31 don't want. This is Inside Coverage with Frank and Charles. Hi. My name is Andrew, live 6:30 Eastern time every Monday through Thursday. Thanks for joining us. As we sit here today, the Dallas Cowboys are 8 days away from getting on a plane and going to Philadelphia for their 2025 kickoff opener, NBC, against the defending Super Bowl champion, the Philadelphia Eagles. Brian Schottenheimer today, as Micah Parsons made the team, this just in, he's not on any list, was asked if he thought that Parsons could actually be ready. I think it's interesting that he noted that the team deems Parson healthy enough to practice, that he had an hour-long meeting with Micah about what he did or didn't do on the sideline on Friday, that he's going to keep it between the two of them, but that there's going to be a ramp-up program, Charles, and that, let's say, magically, Micah Parsons got on the field tomorrow, which didn't sound like that's imminent, but that if he did, Schottenheimer basically said it's not like he's going to play 75 plays next week. So we're already at that point. Right. Where if he just shows up at practice, you're getting a diminishing return, or at a minimum, a diminished snap count next Thursday.
I mean, I think this tells us two things. Number one, it tells us that the Cowboys are now taking the stance that, hey, we think you're healthy enough to be out there. And that changes our relationship a little bit if you're not going to be out there. I think it's a very soft way to send that message out. But to me, it's clear. Like, he said the MRI looks okay. Like, it looks fine. They're not overly concerned about any, you know, lingering back issue. And he said that we would expect there to be a ramp-up process. We wouldn't play him, max-level snaps against the Philadelphia Eagles, which is all a manner or a posture of saying, we're willing to do what we need to do to get you back out on the field as a football player. And we think that you are now in a position to get back out there as a football player. If Micah decides, I'm not going to be out there as a football player and I'm on your 53-man roster, now the Cowboys have to look at options. Now what do they do? Now do you start to talk about, okay, are we crossing into territory where there's fines, conduct detrimental to the team, does the relationship get far more adversarial? So that's number one. Number two, it at least indicates to me, okay, hey, there's a chance that Mike is just going to play the deal out, that they had their, you know, they locked horns in the preseason. The negotiation went the way it went. And there's a chance that on Micah's side, they have huddled and said, you know what, let's just play the deal out, because guess what? They'll have to pay you more next offseason. At some point, we'll fight to free agency. We can re-rack this thing next offseason. I don't know if I would call this progress, but I think it at least puts the Dallas Cowboys in a position to take some kind of action if Micah Parsons chooses not to play in the first game of the season.
Yeah, and I want to take a different angle with this, because we've talked Micah and Jerry to death, but I thought about Brian Schottenheimer today, the coach who's in a really tough spot. He's a rookie head coach, wasn't all that popular of a hire, really. He takes over the most watched team in the world, a team that with 7-10 last year, but still its fan base wants it to make a Super Bowl every year. And now he's given this situation to deal with. And I think he's done a good job so far. Part of that is Jerry takes so many of the bullets here that Schottenheimer just get asked about it, but Jerry's quotes take over anyway. But at the same time, this is a real test for rookie head coach and Brian Schottenheimer. How does he handle this? He's in the middle, right? He's got to keep everybody happy here, and including Micah Parsons, who might be on the field for him in week one if everything goes well. So I think this is not the test Brian Schottenheimer really wanted, but here you go, Brian. You're right in the middle of the fire. You are in the biggest controversy the NFL has right now. And hey, you got to get ready to play the defending champs in 9 days. Hey, it's just going to be interesting to see how Brian Schottenheimer handles it and how he comes out of it. So far, so good. I think he's done well to come out today and say, hey, I talked to Mike and talked for an hour, but I'm not going to share anything with you guys. That stays between us. I thought that's a perfect way to handle it. It's just a tough spot for a rookie head coach who was already under this weird pressure of being expected to make a Super Bowl of a team that went 7-10 last year.
Yeah, and let me just throw this in as well for Micah Parsons. Let's say he gets on the field Friday, Saturday, whatever it is, hypothetically for practice. I'm going to get anxious for any player that has that little on-field prep time.
Agreed.
Before going full speed in an opener. Not a preseason game, but the opener with everybody watching. So fingers crossed they work something out one way or the other. This guy's got an opener coming up as well. The Houston Texans I'm not good at counting, on the 7th. How about that? How many ever days away that is, will be in Los Angeles to face the Rams at SoFi Stadium week one in one of those 4 p.m. Eastern time kicks. Earlier today, C.J. Stroud joined Inside Coverage. C.J. Stroud is here on behalf of Applebee's with us. We'll get to the fettuccine coming up in a second, C.J., I promise. Heading to year number 3, though. How you feeling? Like, big picture, camp is finally over. Get a little bit of a break here. We got the Rams coming up in a little bit.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm very excited to, you know, go present my talents and our team and, you know, just to see our progress from the beginning of camp to now. So I think, you know, we've done a great job of building a callus, building toughness, and, you know, our foundation, I think, is going to last a long time. And even though, you know, during the season, we'll still be finding our identity in ways. But I'm very excited.
Talk about building that callus. I've heard that a lot from teams this year. Like, A, obviously, DeMeco is going to give you a physical training camp. And B, it's hot as you know what down there in Houston. But, you know, there are some teams with the philosophy, hey, we're going to kind of skate through the preseason. We'll crank it up come week one. But other teams, like you guys, want to build that callus. What did that feel like through camp?
Yeah, you know, it's tough. It's not easy. We're asked to do a lot in this weather, which is not easy. But, we were able to get away for a little bit and go to West Virginia where we had training camp for a week. And so that helped. We had a joint practice against Detroit in nice weather, which helped. But I think it gives us an edge. And I think, you know, when you think about the elite teams, they flourish and they do well in the tough times. And I think, you know, you can't mimic those situations in practice, so to speak, all the time, but you can prepare. And I think that's the main thing that we try to do is just prepare for that moment. And I know it's heat. It'll probably be cold by that time, but it's just the mental part of it.
As you prepare, let's talk about you personally. It's, I don't know if it's a cliche. It's kind of an old adage. We've seen it all throughout sports and sometimes with quarterbacks as well. Like, amazing rookie season,
I don't want to say sophomore slump, but I know you have high standards. And then year three, it kind of takes off. As you've thought about everything you want year three, CJ, where does that growth come from you personally this year?
I was just staying committed to the consistent wins in life. I'm somebody who is very hard on myself, but I'm trying to be more understanding. And I don't know, I really try not to harp back on last year. You know, I learned my lessons and I don't know what people expect from me from, you know, but, you know, that's a whole different conversation. But I do believe that I am still a great player. I do think I'm still a top quarterback in this league. I've put it on tape. I just, you know, things around me haven't always been, you know, the best just because injuries. And, you know, so that hasn't been easy. But I do believe, I still believe myself. I know my team does. My family does. And at the end of the day, that's all that really matters. So I'm excited to go out there and put it on tape. And I don't, I hate all the talking, tired of talking. I just want to play now. So,
no.
Yeah.
Dude, I get it. And of course you're still a top quarterback in this league. You said you're too hard on yourself. Like that, like, it sounds like you're really hard on yourself, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I mean, I think that was makes me great though.
I agree with you. And you got a new offensive coordinator this year, Nick Caley, guy that comes from LA, guy that maybe has a different view on the offense and is giving you a little bit more ownership this year. CJ, what does that ownership look like?
Yeah, I mean, it looks like ownership. It looks like, hey, this is not just somebody's baby. This is, you know, this is in your, the keys are in your hands, CJ. So like, do what you feel is best. And for me, I think that's been dope because that's kind of what I grew up doing playing football. You know, when I was in college and well, I started when I was in high school, you know, I had Rain, I had ability to change the play, I had abilities to change protection, and I have the same ability in college, and now I have the same ability in the NFL. So this is kind of more normal for me. Just to think, I'm a smart guy. You know, I see the field really well. I can see coverage, see blitzes, and I think the one thing that I've learned is like when you're all wrong, you're right as an offense. And so we can all be on the wrong page, but if we know where our issues are, we can handle them accordingly. But if we're all right, then we're right. So sometimes you know, you're batting 800, but sometimes you're batting 200. So like, you just gotta take your lumps and learn from it. But you know, this has been really encouraging because I mean, I've been watching a lot of Brady clips because Kells was also in New England, and they're showing me film from like 2004, and it's the same offense almost. You know, Brady is still early in it, and you know, it took him. I don't want to speak for him, but I'm sure it took him a little minute to ace the offense. And I feel like I'm, you know, just starting out, but I'm getting there. Slowly but surely.
That's got to be cool. Like looking at Tom Brady tape 20 years ago and your offense. I know you're a student of the game. That's awesome.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Have you talked to Brady about it?
No, I try to leave him alone. You know, he's probably a busy dude. But the film speaks for itself. And you know, we have great coaches. I think Kells does a great job of explaining what the looks are and why the center or Brady did what they did and why we should either do it or not do it. So I think they've done a great job by, you know, explaining, you know, the nuances of playing really NFL quarterback.
All right, let's talk about the run game. We know Joe's out going to be at least the first month here. As a student of the game, as a guy that used to play in Columbus and probably get Nick Chubb games on TV all the time, what's it like to turn around and hand him the football?
Oh, it's fun, man. You know, I got a glimpse of it, you know, against Carolina in the preseason, which was, you know, real ball. And dude, he's powerful, he's strong, he's fast. He has great vision. He knows how to set up his blocks. And I think he's going to do great. I think our O-line is doing really well. You know, we're IDing, we're putting the body on the body and driving our feet, moving guys. And I think I think Damian's going to have another breakout year. This is his type of scheme, more downhill running. So I'm excited to see that. And we got a young rookie, Woody Marks, who's great as well. So, and the one thing that's really cool about it is everybody's involved. You know, the receivers are involved in the run game, the tight ends, myself, the backs, the O-line, of course. So it's dope to see, it's like a baking a cake. It's like the first layer, the second layer, the third layer, and everything is coming together finally.
Have you gotten Nick to show any emotion yet? Has he actually opened up? I know he smiles every now and then, but he's kind of he's kind of flatline.
No, he's actually really hilarious. He's very funny. He's one of those guys I feel where, you know, once you get to know him, you understand, you know, his personality, and he's talkative. He talks a lot. He is not very quiet. Well, in ways, he's quiet most of the time, but like if you talk to him, he's going to have a conversation. He's a really funny dude.
Can't wait to see his Saturday evening Batman IG post the night before your first game. You're wearing the IE hat. Your first game, as luck would have it, Nick Haley's first game too, is back in Los Angeles. You have faced the Rams. You have faced the Chargers, preseason, postseason. But other than the Rose Bowl, I know the Rose Bowl was fun. As a professional, CJ, you have never played back in Los Angeles. Have you thought about what that's going to be like?
Yeah, I'm excited, man. I've always cherished homecomings. You know, playing in Ohio, wasn't always easy because my family didn't get to see me play a lot or all the time. My mom would always come out, but like my extended family. I'm super excited. I have a lot of people come to the game. It'll be fun. I got to stay focused and, you know, stay locked in. But I think it gives me an extra piece of motivation. So I'm very excited.
What's it like being a Buckeye in Texas this week?
I'm accepting all the smoke. Here in Houston, it's more Aggie land. So, I have a lot of Aggies surrounding me, but there's a couple UT guys. I have buddies who are UT guys. And I don't know if I have any teammates that went to UT. I don't have a coach, but it's a couple harsh words and a little bit of back and forth, but it'll be fun.
You going? We going to see you on the sideline?
You might see me, maybe.
You might see him. All right. So you're a Julian Sain fan?
Oh, yeah. Definitely, yeah. I support all the guys, man. You know, I know how hard it is to be a young guy in Coach Day's offense and under his coaching. You know, he's hard on us. I understand, you know, what it is to play at Ohio State. And I think, you know, from what I can see from afar, he's done a good job of, you know, keeping his head down, working. I think he's going to have a good year. So excited to see. I'm in support from afar. And if he ever needs me, you know, I hope he knows that he can call or text or whatever. So, I'm excited to see.
Yeah, we're all excited to see it. Game of the year right out of the gate here, Ohio State and Texas. CJ, good luck against the Rams. Good luck the whole rest of the way. Thanks for doing this, man.
Thank you, Andrew. Appreciate you, man.
Appreciate C.J. Stroud there, who gets a homecoming. And I mentioned Nick Haley, who is the new O.C. with the Texans, been the tight end coach here the last couple of years in Los Angeles. So familiarity certainly there. And C.J. Stroud gets to play in front of his hometown fans. His previous time here was with Ohio State at the Rose Bowl, a 45-42 victory over Utah. Coming up next, Cut Down Day, some notable names who are given pink slips, and which names we think the other 31 teams care about on waivers. That's next on Inside Coverage. So not only is today the day that you cut down to 53, but teams also have to make injured reserve decisions. And sometimes, as teams in the preseason keep injury news close to the vest, we find out a little bit more. And such was the case, Frank and Charles, in Atlanta today, where the Caleb McGarry injury became really real when they put him on IR and they said he was out for the year. So the right tackle for a left-handed quarterback, Frank, who just signed a new contract. And remember, also had the Rashawn Slater injury for a right-handed quarterback in LA. So these are both significant injuries with teams with playoff aspirations. This one, though, in Atlanta is a massive blow for a team with an inexperienced quarterback.
Yeah, absolutely. And this isn't the kind of injury news that everybody's going to really understand the ramifications of, but McGarry is one of the better right tackles in the league. And you think about how much time we've given to talking about the Buccaneers missing Tristan Wirfs at the beginning of the season. Well, McGarry's not going to be there at all. And like you said, Pettix is left-handed. That's his blind side. Obviously does not help. One of the strengths of the Falcons the past few years anyway has been their offensive line and they're losing a big part of that. It just, I'm not very high in Falcons this year. This just reinforces that. That's a massive loss for them to already lose McGarry for the season.
Yeah, I'm wonder if maybe, you know, Cam Robinson obviously played left tackle. He was slotted in left tackle for the Texans. But I mean, Cam Robinson's a guy that becomes available or is available now in terms of a trade. If you're the Atlanta Falcons, if you go, do we just take a flyer here and maybe see if we can reshuffle this and at least get, you know, as experienced a player as possible in that right tackle slot? And it's not, obviously, it's Penix is the first guy you think about because of, as you said, Andrew, the fact that he's a left-handed quarterback. But this is also one of your anchor offensive linemen. I mean, he's like a tone-setting guy. He's a leader in the locker room. I mean, he is exactly what the Falcons are all about, you know, culture-wise, and the toughness that he ultimately brings to the table. As Frank said, he's one of the best tackles in the NFL. So it really affects everything. I mean, it affects Bijan Robinson. It affects how the offense, I think, in Atlanta ultimately is going to have to function without him. Huge offensive tackle loss, and I would not be surprised to see maybe them, the Falcons, poke around to see if there might be an experienced right tackle they might be able to trade for.
You know, it's interesting you bring up Cam Robinson. And full disclosure, when I taped a C.J. Stroud interview earlier this morning, the Texans' moves had not yet been announced. This was quite early before teams had to turn in their full list of cuts. But the news had been floated that maybe Trent Brown wouldn't make the team, and he didn't. A veteran offensive tackle who signed in the offseason after an injury-filled year last year in Cincinnati is likely coming back to the practice squad. So there's a veteran name out there who's free to sign wherever he wants. He's not eligible, or he doesn't have to go through waivers. The Cam Robinson one is interesting as well. And Charles, as you said yesterday, everyone needs O-line help. Everybody needs O-line help. And if right now you look at your depth and say, we're good, I guarantee you, Charles, and you know this, you're going to need O-line help at some point. And the later and later in the season it goes, the fewer and fewer options you have and the more and more desperate these teams get.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned, you know, prior to us taping, you know, we started to talk just a little bit about cut down day, and you see a team like the Lions, you see some teams will cut more than, you know, they'll get below 53. And typically when teams do that, there's an idea. They're sitting there going, okay, we think there might be maybe an offensive lineman who's going to try to get stashed on a practice squad elsewhere. Let's scrape basically these practice squad, assignments and go get some depth maybe for our offensive line. Anytime I see a team go under the 53, you know, at times it's because they're re-signing one of their own guys who has more than 4 years of service and going through that whole dance. But I often they will leave an extra slot open just in case someone they don't expect ends up landing either, you know, not going through the waiver system and then getting signed to a practice squad, and they'll try to jump on that as quickly as possible.
And I think you said it really well, Charles, yesterday, that any offensive lineman, they're just not available. I think that's the number one asset that any team is looking for, because you can never have enough. You're always going to need backup offensive linemen. Nobody has enough depth. It's become really, really hard to develop those guys and find good linemen. And that's another reason the McGarry injury is so bad for the Falcons. Yeah, they could go sign Trent Brown. They could go sign Cam Robinson. Continuity is a big deal on the offensive line. And you're asking these guys, hey, we have 10 days before the season opener. Come on in and be our starting right tackle. That's a tough ask. So, yes, I think that when you see these guys get cut, get waived, there's maybe bigger names that we've heard of. But I think teams, first and foremost, look to see, is there any offensive lineman worth it that we can come in, that we can pick up? Because all 32 teams need offensive line depth.
So this is real-time research here. As we're talking about this, remember I had said yesterday that only 27 players last year, right after the deadline, were claimed in the first 24 hours off waivers, and 7 of those 27 went to the Panthers, who had the number one waiver claim position. Right now, Tennessee has it. So I looked up. Of those 27, only 4 were offensive linemen, which would seem to run counter to what we just said, but in reality, it kind of just backs up everything we just said, because teams aren't cutting any offensive linemen that are any good, right? Like, if there's someone there, you're going to find a way to stash this guy, someone there that you like. because you're eventually going to need them. Want to run through some of the names that did get cut loose today. And some of these names are subject to waivers because they have less than 4 years, fewer than 4 years service time. And then veterans like Marquez Valdez-Scantling, who got cut loose by the Seahawks, played last year in New Orleans. He is not subject to waivers because he is a veteran here. But the Giants waived Tommy DeVito. This one isn't that much of a surprise because from the second they signed Russell and Jameis and drafted Jackson Dart, he was clearly the odd man out. There's an interesting one here in Diontae Johnson. Frank, he's a guy that was in Cleveland. You know, from what I saw at practice, he can still move. He can still get off the line. He could still make that first guy miss when he does catch the ball. I thought he had some trouble with the dropsies, not only in a game, but in practices as well. A lot of people viewed this as his last shot. I mean, last year, he went from Carolina to Baltimore to quitting in Baltimore. He admitted that. To Houston, to back to Baltimore. And remember, a year ago in March, he was in Pittsburgh. The Browns were the only team that called him. Do you think someone takes a flyer on Diontae Johnson?
And I don't think so, because a lot of times when you get these guys, it's like, all right, he didn't work in that organization. But think about the coaches who have basically given up on him in the last 18 months. Mike Tomlin, Hall of Famer. John Harbaugh is a Hall of Famer. DeMeco Ryans is awesome. I love him. Kevin Stefanski is two-time Coach of the Year. All four of those coaches said, no. Yeah, you might be able to still get open, but we don't really want you around here anymore. So I just think this is the end of the line, which is crazy because I remember, you know, when Baltimore traded for him, it was like, oh, they got him for nothing. This is a pretty good addition. And then you figure out pretty quickly, how many receivers has Mike Tomlin through the years kind of hid their craziness, I guess? Like, if you think about the string of receivers who have gone through Pittsburgh,
the
Mike Tomlin has
gotten. Well.
Oh my goodness. A guy
managed
he's gotten career years out of. Whew, but that's why I just when four really, really respected coaches absolutely give up on a guy, yeah, I don't think a fifth one's going to try him out.
Well, not only that, I mean, some of the organizations that let him go, the Carolina Panthers needed wideouts, right? I mean, they needed talent. They needed somebody to show up. You could argue the Cleveland Browns, maybe you can sit there and say, well, they added Isaiah Bond, right? And that's something that materialized in the preseason. So you can make the argument that, okay, there's an extra guy there on the roster now that they feel is viable and very much going to be a part of their future moving forward. So there has to be a sacrifice made. That has a guaranteed contract, right? But again, it's not like he went through rosters that were not wanting for wide receiver talent. Same with Baltimore. Baltimore needed wide receiver depth badly and moved off of him. It's a management situation with him. I mean, I talked directly to people in Carolina after, that didn't work out ultimately. And I kind of thought, well, did Bryce Young kind of turn a corner after, Barkevious Mingo and Diontae Johnson were out the door? They pushed back a little bit on that, but it was clear it was, again, a management situation. And as Andrew said, there's been a history of drops as well. I just don't know what else now is out there for him, and how he can get himself back onto an NFL roster this season.
Two things real quick. Number one, from everything I hear, he did all the right things in Cleveland. It just became a numbers game as well. Didn't blow anyone away, although I do think he can get open. I saw it with my own two eyes. But they gave Isaiah Bond the guaranteed money. He still needed a kick returner, and they decided to move on. There was no guaranteed money on that deal. Number two, you made me laugh there, Charles. I know it was unintentional. This is teammates picking each other up. Jonathan Mingo, not Barkevious Mingo, the legendary number 51.
Hey,
you said Barkevious.
Barkevious, have a thought about him.
I might have a Barkevious football card over here.
But you're right about that. But this is so funny because you know why that name was in my head? Because when we were talking about cutdown days, I was thinking of Isaiah Simmons, and I thought, man, this is like the Barkevious Mingo of like this era, like this super athlete, but you're like, can he be a football player for us? I was thinking about that during the break, and I think that's how his name replaced Jonathan Mingo in my head.
It's okay. During a game on Saturday, Isaiah McGuire had a sack, and I said Elijah. No, Isaiah McGuire. Like, I got Elijah McGuire, the former Raging Cajun running back. Like, for some reason, he was in my head instead of Isaiah McGuire, and it's like 5 yards on me. All right, there's
Isaiah's a good young player. Right, he's going to be good, by the way. Quick shout.
Yeah, definitely. He had like a top five PFF grade against the run last year.
He's good. All he's going to be a pretty good end. All edge players. Merit. There's. See, I'm positive NFL. About the Browns. I mean, I'm positive about the Browns.
There
Andrew.
We are.
Isaiah McGuire. Isaiah right. McGuire. Breakout. Yeah, I
mean, you could have said Jerry McGuire. Here, guys.
They were him too. Any other names stand out to you on the waiver wire? Because teams, like your average fan, looks for these marquee names. You and I get excited when Greg Dulcich got waived by the Giants. Mm. Ooh, there's a name somebody might like. Who stood out to you, Charles?
I always think of, draft picks that get cut, fairly quickly. And you look at Malachi Corley with the Jets. Mm-hmm. And, that was a guy, again, when he was going into the draft, he's coming out of Western Kentucky. There were times where I remember people thinking maybe he could potentially viably be a first round pick. And then the combine came
and
went.
He's Debo, everyone said.
Yeah, that's right. He was Debo. He was going to be the next Debo Samuel. And then the Jets released all that footage of how hard they worked to end up, moving up and drafting him. I believe what was like in the second round, wasn't it? And, so for him to get cut, I'm sure there's going to be a team out there that will say, is there something here claimable? Did he just need a fresh start?
And for me, Andrew, one name that stuck out when I saw it, and it wasn't a huge surprise, but still, Cole Strange, the offensive lineman the Patriots drafted, I believe 2022 first round. And immediately you think a couple of things. A, Bill Belichick was making some terrible draft picks at the end, just absolutely terrible. And it really set the Patriots back, but they're back on track now, it seems. And two, you obviously think of the clip, right, of Les Snead and Sean McVay seeing it happening live. And they're like, wow,
that was me.
We were looking at him at 104 or whatever it was.
Yeah. Full disclosure, I was the guy that took that clip off a live stream and tweeted it, and then it went viral and Sean felt bad about it. Look, they were not laughing at the pick of Cole Strange. What happened there is that Les had given Sean McVay a list of all the guys that they could maybe draft in the second or third round at O-line. And Sean was like, you made me look at all this tape and this guy gets taken in the first round. Like, you're wasting my time. Why'd you make me watch a first round pick? And it was interpreted as they were mocking the pick. And I was the guy that tweeted it and it got 50,000 or 500,000 views. And Sean the next day had to call the kid and apologize. And he felt bad. I'm the bad guy. Totally out of context. That's Charles.
Way to bring up a good memory, Frank.
Yeah, that's me. Wow. Inside coverage tomorrow. Bye.
Wow.